From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by one of the very favorite guests on TDZ, poet, a podcaster you can hear on the American Hysteria podcast, exploring the fantastical thinking and irrational fears of Americans. No, that can't be right.
Not us.
Not Americans. Through the lens of moral panics, urban legends, conspiracy theories, much else. Please welcome the brilliant, the talented Chelsea Weber Smith.
Chelsea!
Hi, guys. Happy to be here.
Hello.
As Jack, always.
Is it Weber or Weber?
It's Weber. You got it.
Woo!
Nailed it.
First time.
Had to make sure. Mm-hmm.
It's actually Weber.
Oh,
Weber.
Mm-hmm. Chris Weber. Thank you.
I went through and on all documents, I did a global search of my computer, every document on my computer, and changed it so to make sure it said Weber like Chris.
Web 3.0.
Thank you. I appreciate that a
lot. What's new? Chelsea, what's new? It's been too long.
It's been too long. I know. Yeah. Well, as I told you guys, we've been working on, well, we'd actually just finished a Jackass series, and that was a lot of fun. Yeah, and I feel like that's up your alley. Did you guys read Big Brother magazine growing up?
I did. Yeah. And I also made stupid shopping cart, like prank videos at the local grocery stores with my friends. And I was like at the perfect age when Jackass came out.
Oh, yeah.
And it basically destroyed half of my body.
Yeah,
I remember seeing the
me
Jackass
too.
Videos when they were video, like VHSs being traded between people.
Like CKY?
Yeah.
Like you talking about CKY?
Yeah, my friend
videos?
In Chicago, I went and visited a friend in Chicago, like in high school, and he showed me them, and I was like, what the fuck is this? This is crazy.
I remember that.
Yeah.
CKY2K or what, dude? Remember that one?
Oof, yeah.
Oof, when Brendan Vallely beats up all those dudes outside the 7-Eleven?
Yeah.
Or Mike Vallely, I mean, I think that's his name. Yeah. That part, we were like, yo, dude, he legit beat these dudes up.
I think the sketch I remember is someone was just ordered all the McDonald's, was carrying it on a tray, and then just did like a spectacular fall.
Oh, yeah.
And like it just went everywhere.
I feel like that's spam. Yeah.
Genius. Genius.
Yeah. I was really into Rab himself, Chris Rab. I was oh man. Sluisbury Stuver for Kiki, one of my favorites.
And he hates mustard, and that's his big thing, is he's terrified whenever mustard gets by him. Is that not him?
No, that's like Yorn.
Oh, right. That's Rake Yorn. Yeah,
Rake
Yorn. Yeah.
Who like got it. He's like,
Rake Yorn?
Like, what is it?
He had the crazy big hair.
Yeah. Like the Viking status. Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Chelsea, now I'm like, I think I'll have to go back and watch
you
this.
You do. I think you'd like this episode. You should listen to it.
It's
very much about how gay Jackass was, too, and how much of a revolution it was at the time to just have dudes hanging out the way they were and not, you know, being afraid to
have their butts out.
Even though it was a joke, it was like a big change from like the really cruel.
It's like, come on, dude. Yeah. Let me put a firework up your asshole.
Yeah.
As a bro. And you're like, okay, that part.
I'm like, yes, homo. Yeah, exactly. But the other thing I wanted to share with you all is we've been doing a new thing on our show called the Urban Legends Hotline, and people can call in and record stories from their childhood, and then we'll like just do whatever research we decide. And the one we're working on right now is about this place called Pig Hill in Pennsylvania. And it's about a group of cannibal pig people that eat teenagers on a lover's lane up there, inbred family, right? Kind of a classic legend.
Kind of thing.
What'd you say?
Like Deliverance vibes. Like
yeah, a little bit of Deliverance
hills
vibe.
Have eyes.
Yeah, definitely.
Little hills have eyes.
But more, we've been like getting really into the pig part of it. You know, like why are they specifically pig people? And I was able to dig up the very first trial that was based on a false confession in American history that ended in an execution. And it was actually about a man accused of bestiality. He was like an indentured servant, and he was accused of it because the pig gave birth to a piglet that was deformed and looked like the man who was a servant. And so they tried him and hanged him for a pig paternity test. And that was, that's the very first false confession as well, because they basically badgered him into confessing. And he thought, okay, you know, based on other trials I've seen, if I repent to God and say, yes, I did this and I'm sorry, I'll get off. But then they were like, no, we're going to hang you anyway. And then he's like, okay, well, I really didn't do this. And and then there was a big bestiality panic, and it ended up meaning that women were the ones milking the cows always, because men were literally not allowed in barns unless they had a chaperone.
Wait, so like a milkmaid is we have that because motherfuckers couldn't keep their hands off animals, basically, and they're like, that's
cows.
It.
Well, not exactly.
Panic was around. Oh, okay.
It was a panic, right? So, of course, that happened, but it was a panic around specifically like servants or like poor people who were, you know, accused of this crime, often because it was convenient, because they wanted to try them for something else. But once it started to reach like the richer Americans, where they were getting accused as well, then suspiciously the panic just kind of fizzled out. So kind of a classic moral panic, but 1600s.
We must take note of this, the cycle of panics and how we can maybe abbreviate them. Because we're in the midst of multiple cycles now. Yeah, right?
That's the hope, guys. Yeah.
Have you ever looked into, is America more panicked than other nations? Or is this just a cycle that every country like goes through? It feels like America's more irrational, right?
I think it depends. I mean, there are some wild moral panics all around the world. I think that's pretty equal across the board. It's just like translated through different religions and cultures. So it's like we might look at one panic. Like there's a panic in different parts of the world where your penis is disappearing and you freak out. And that's been like, even recently, people's penises have been suspiciously disappearing.
Yeah.
So, you know,
what's
we might
the cure
think
for
that's...
that? Not that I'm worried, but what is the cure for that?
Yeah. You know, I haven't looked enough.
How do you bring it back?
Though,
Chelsea, how do you bring it back? If it isn't?
Well, you know, it never leaves. So it just kind of.
Wait, what is that panic? People are claiming their penises have vanished, like from their bodies.
Yeah. You remember
when
this, Jack?
Yeah.
I remember this from the Cracked days that was
a
panic from another country.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it goes back to like I just typed in penis vanishes.
Like turtle
panic.
Penis, right?
Yeah.
They call it turtle penis because the penis like retracts into the body like a turtle's head.
Okay.
You got,
okay.
You got it.
Yeah.
Turtle penis panic. Okay. I'm going to look. Yeah. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah.
Anyways, we could clearly talk about this all day. I heard that some bestiality is where Grimace came from, actually, in the first place.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So, yeah. A lot of people don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
What is something, Courtney, that you think is overrated?
Well, I just opened a student loan bill this morning, so I was reminded about college and how I still owe $8,000 and how I'm probably going to go into my 40s and still owe money. So
yeah.
I feel scammed.
Yeah.
What to you was like at the time, right? When you were on the precipice of taking on this debt, what was in your mind? Did you have any foresight, or was just kind of like, I don't know, everyone's fucking doing it. So
I didn't want to go because I was going to be an actor too. And I was wildly delusional, but I wasn't so delusional that I thought like, oh, the best way to do this is by going to college, you know,
but my
parents were like, you know, this is so important. And the thing is, I love taking classes. Like I still take writing classes to this day, I feel like colleges are just for real estate holdings, essentially. It's so indirect, like how the teachers get paid and everything. So anyway, scam.
Yeah. Mm. Wait, and you studied theater or acting? Is that what you wanted?
Yeah.
Bad
call. Yeah, I know.
My thing was like, I'll study history because my backup will be to be a teacher. So at least if with all else fails, at least I have like a degree in something I can be like, and I want to teach that. So fuck it. Like, let's go with it. But yeah, I totally get that. Part of me was like, what am I going to do with this shit? If I'm going to be a sick ass podcaster.
Yeah.
Then have that for
I knew I was going to be a podcaster. I majored in podcasting and everyone was very confused because it didn't exist yet. But.
Yeah, we all knew.
Yeah.
Jack, what? It's called podcasting, Dad.
Colleges are like venture capital firms, essentially, with with classes that teach, that also have classes there, which I think venture capital firms should just start offering classes and put colleges out of business.
Exactly. Yeah, cannibalize them. Like, we'll teach you how to just fucking, you know, pillage economically, financially. Go ahead.
That's one of those industries that millennials were supposed to have killed, is colleges, right? Wasn't that like a thing?
Oh, did we kill colleges
don't
too?
Care about colleges anymore.
I thought we killed everything.
Yeah, but they, I don't know. They still seem to be thriving.
A lot of millennials went, though. But I do think in our wake, we hopefully put a dent in some of these, you know,
maybe the Gen Z kids who saw their older millennial relatives are like, what the fuck is wrong with Courtney? No way.
They got taken for like
did you have fun at least? Did you have fun at least in college?
I tried to get out of there as soon as possible. So I graduated. I'd taken some PSEO, some college classes in high school. And then I also went to a FAST. So I graduated in like 2 years and made mistakes in other places.
Yeah. Of course.
You took PSEO and then said, P.S. See you. That was my attempt. It sounded better. It sounded like it was going to sound more like it in my head. And it didn't quite work out.
Yeah.
What is something that you think is underrated?
All right. Ready?
Yes.
Working. I wouldn't be doing my job right now if I didn't take this and every opportunity to mention the ongoing writer's strike. I'm a proud member of the Writers Guild of America, and we have been on strike since the beginning of May because we want a fair contract, and the studios refuse to even sit down with us and discuss it, let alone give us what we're asking for. It's very frustrating. A lot of people, when this started in my life, who are like sympathetic to this cause and everything, they're like, you'll probably enjoy a little vacation. It's not a vacation. No. I really like working. And I writing specifically is the thing that I'm very good at, and I just want to do it, and the studios won't let me, and it's maddening.
Yeah. Who had that take that was like, I think the strike
Zaslav
won because Zaslav's like, because
so
they like to write.
Fans of Zaslav on this show, Daniel. We
they're proving him right.
And his take was that he was like, the strike's gonna end because of a love of working. People love to work, and we're just, we will welcome them back with open arms. So he's using the fact that you are a creative machine against you.
I know.
Which is, yeah, so devious and shitty.
How much of it do you think, you know, I've seen that take of like how there's like a big, there's that big obscure thing about like Netflix numbers or streaming numbers and how that's, that could affect things. Do you think that's playing a huge part, or it's just general? Obviously, there's the overarching theme of greed on behalf of the networks and streamers. But like, do you I've seen that take going around Twitter. I was curious if you had any thoughts on that.
I don't have any extra insight into this than anyone else who doesn't, you know, read Twitter and Variety and Hollywood Reporter and all the other trades and everything. But that does make a whole lot of sense, because that's something that the streamers won't even, they don't seem to want to budge on
the data.
Data, yeah. Transparency.
Yeah.
And it makes a whole lot of sense, because that number could either be very, very large and they don't want us to know that, because then it would reveal just how much
money
that we should be getting in residuals. Right. Or, which seems slightly more likely, that money could be the number could be very, very low, which they don't want Wall Street,
right,
and investors to know about. It's all, yeah, anyone who has spent any time in tech or Silicon Valley startups, like it all sounds very familiar to every single Silicon Valley startup that eventually burst, because they go big and they go fast and they invest and they talk about growth. And have very little transparency. And then when eventually they have to reveal their numbers, everything falls apart, because
right,
they don't.
Yeah.
They inflated their own importance and impact.
Yeah, it sounds familiar to also the ones that succeed. Like, yeah. Facebook did that. And then like this year, I read somewhere that like Facebook's having like an amazing year. Like at the stock market, like
really
at the stock market where oh, where all the
I'm going
guys
to the stock
go together
market,
and just throw stocks back and forth. Yeah, like Facebook's stock is like doing well, or they're, I don't know. I'm just like, how are we still here after yeah, Meta, after the pivot to video bullshit?
Oh yeah, and then the listener was saying that like the Twitter video views, I think it's like 2 to 3 seconds is what triggers a view.
Yeah.
Now,
really?
So, that's right. We're right back where we started, where people are like, yep, you got to see the fucking numbers we're doing here, folks. Give us your ad dollars. Wait, what? It's all an yeah, illusion? Fuck.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
And
And we're back.
We're back.
And Aisha, so yeah, I read the quote, but you talk about pop culture informing how we think about ourselves, how we like shape ourselves. You kind of run us through various pop culture figures who you modeled your identity on as you were growing up. I've often said on this show that Freud fucked up big time by using ancient Greek myths instead of pop culture archetypes from the 90s. I think he could have really made a name for himself if he had just, you know, stuck to pop culture. But it does feel like these are the things that we should be like, as we're thinking about, you know, where does this weird urge come from to stan people, for instance? Like, these are the figures that I think actually exist in people's minds and like deep in their unconscious.
Right. How did you explain again this concept of inadvertent self-formation by way of popular culture?
Well, I think especially when we're just kids or adolescents, we're not thinking deeply about what we're consuming, what we're viewing or watching. We're taking it in. We're like a sponge, right? It's just everything affects us and we don't necessarily know how to name it or know how to identify it. And it comes out in how we talk to each other, how we think of ourselves, how we see ourselves. I mean, I think about, you know, growing up as a kid in the 90s and how casual homophobic language was just like the thing that everyone did. Yeah. And if you go back and watch the movies that we were all watching, whether it was like Ace Ventura or like the teen movies of it, like there's all this casual homophobia, you know, showing up there. Yeah. And so you don't realize until years later, or at least, I mean, I'm sure plenty of actual queer people recognize it in those moments, you know. Obviously it was never right or okay, and it definitely was hurting people then. But I think, you know, part of what growing up hopefully is means being able to go back and sort of look at the things that you took in when you were younger and understand how they may have and may still be affecting how you view things today.
Right.
And so that's where the sort of the idea of it being inadvertent comes from, is because like it doesn't, like sometimes it just happens to you and then you have to later go back and realize, okay, how did this happening to me make me who I am now? And a lot of it is sometimes like going back and undoing, trying to undo what has sort of calcified in your mind and brain, right, and how you relate to things. Yeah, like it was, I'm pretty sure when I was a kid, I probably used the F word, the homophobic F word, a couple times because that's what I, you know, grew up around.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a lot of undoing and trying to become better, hopefully, if you're able to go back and look at those things and recognize right. yeah. those things.
I feel like so much of that debate now where people are like, it's too woke are like people who can't let go of like, but my favorite movie is this. And I have to say it's bad now if I agree. And
oh
it is
God.
So true.
Yeah.
Like how much we take on shit that we see in the media, especially in the age before social media. Like everyone's like looking for something that might feel like them or could be them or something you could kind of just feel like aligned with. What were like the shows or works of media that you kind of grasped and sort of ingested to kind of become your personality?
You know, I write in the book about what I call my hoe phase. you know, which lasted from roughly my late teens to mid-ish 20s, and how I kind of had this idea of what I wanted to be as a girl slash woman and how I related to men. Boys and men. And I thought that, you know, I had to be sort of tomboy-ish and the type of girl who could hang with the guys, not necessarily like, I never pretended to like sports. Like that was never sports aren't my thing. I never pretended right. to do that. Like it wasn't that, but you know, I'd use what I liked, movies, TV, music to sort of signal, oh, I'm like, I'm cool. Like Superbad is one of my favorite movies.
Right,
aren't I
right,
cool?
Right.
It really is one of my favorite movies. I love that movie. but like I would play that up or play up the fact that, you know, I was really into, I don't know, Freaks and Geeks or The Wire or whatever as like the thing I put on my dating profiles. And I saw like this vision of like wanting to be closer to this idea of masculinity in a way, as a way of like shielding myself from getting hurt by boys and men. Mm. And so I was very much like, Samantha Jones was my girl. I wanted to be like her from Sex and the City. Nola Darling and She's Gotta Have It, the 1986 film, not the TV remake by Spike Lee. Like those were kind of my, you know, the badass women who fucked around a lot and like didn't like were anti-relationship, anti-getting too close to men.
Right.
That was kind of what I clung to. And then over time, I realized more than that's reductive and also like acting like a man, thinking like a man, whatever. This was before Steve Harvey.
Yeah, shout out Steve Harvey.
I wasn't just like, I'm not going to just think like a man. I'm going to act like one too. Fuck being a lady. Yeah. But like once I realized that was all kind of a false dichotomy and that even if you do act like that as a woman or as a person who presents as a woman, like you're still going to get the short of the end of the stick because like you're still going to get, you're going to be slut shamed or you're going to be, you know, it's just, there's no winning.
Right.
And the idea of getting closer, like masculinity is not something at least that I want to aspire to in the way that I conceived of it or that pop culture conceived of it, which was often like the ladies' man, whether it's Sam Malone in Cheers or not that this like actually what I love about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is that it's actually like critiquing those things. But like I'm thinking of Dennis and like the Dennis system and how like that is clearly something to be that's like being critiqued, this idea mm-hmm. of masculine men. And what were those guys, the pickup artists or whatever, like that whole culture?
Yeah.
Or the game or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that whole thing. I thought that's what I wanted to be. And then I realized it's all bullshit. It's all patriarchal. Yeah. And I had to sort of undo all of that mindset about how to be a good person and how not to be an asshole. Because really, I was just trying to mimic not really masculinity per se, but just like being an asshole, which is often assigned to men.
Right.
And often seen as a good thing in men.
Yeah. What TV people, what media people shaped you over the years? Because I feel like I was always a loose collection of shit I saw on TV and films.
So yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to take a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Kenny G, number one, first and foremost, obviously influenced. I don't know if you've seen pictures of me in fifth grade, but my hair was
permed.
Long permed and always looked a little bit wet. I just wore, suit dress shirts with a vest over top at all times. Yeah.
Perfect.
You know, I watched Jaws so many times before the age of like six that I think I was like a combination of like Sheriff Brody and Quint at various points, or like wanting to be that. And then also Rocky and Karate Kid were the ones that I really saw it in, like something about like the, like I thought it was cool to get your ass kicked. I think other people like thought it was cool to like, yeah, like other kids would be like, I'm into Bruce Lee or like somebody who is famously an ass kicker. And the two characters that I really loved were people who could like really take a punch and just like keep getting back up. And so
the underdog.
Yeah, the underdog who is just like losing fights repeatedly. I also like John McClane, who, you know, is just dragging his like broken body across broken glass like by the end of that movie. Like so, something about that probably tied into the very strict Catholic upbringing that I had, you know, like some like weird Mel Gibsonian,
right?
Like,
the torture. Passion.
Yeah.
The passion like, of Jack.
Sadism or something was probably tied in there. But yeah. And then Michael Jordan came along and I was like, I want to be that. I want to be Michael Jordan. And then went to like, you know, early 90s hip hop. And then I'd say like pop intellectuals and writer, like Hunter S. Thompson, even though I like didn't love his writing, I was like, man, that guy's cool. I want to, you know, drinking, use drugs, like the future doesn't exist while still being respected as an intellectual. And I feel like those were kind of the main ones as I was like still forming myself.
Yeah, I was just so addicted to TV and like films that like every time I saw something, I could like find, I was like always looking for like identity in like film, like the things I was watching. And like one of the earliest ones was like Goku and Dragon Ball as a kid. Like, I was just like, oh, this, like, I felt like it was teaching me things about toughness. And then I wanted to be Michael Jordan. And then I wanted to be Will Smith in Fresh Prince. Then I was Ace Ventura for about 2 years with the way I spoke, like just annoying Jim Carrey.
Every kid. Yeah. Every kid.
Every kid.
I was all righty then, all that shit.
Yeah. I had specific friends I remember who were Ace Ventura for 3 years in a row. And they, in my memory, the funniest kids I knew.
Yeah.
Funniest
right.
people I've ever met.
They're like, they're just doing Ace Ventura.
Just totally co-opted that shit. And I was like, this man is a genius.
Yeah, 100%. And then I was the Wayans brothers.
Yeah.
Probably Marlon more than Sean, because Marlon was a little more outgoing. Then I was Tiger Woods, because that was the first time I saw a Blasian person like me on TV. And I was like, okay, so I'm that. And I tried to play golf. That shit, I was never going anywhere. Then there was The Rock. Shout out another like vaguely Blasian person.
Yeah.
Then puberty hit. It was all rap. I was like Jay-Z. I was Method Man. I was Pharrell, because people were like, you could be like Pharrell. I was like, yeah, thank you.
Wait, really?
I will not wear trucker hats. I was wearing trucker hats and shit. You should have seen me in the early
aughts. I mean, I wore trucker hats too, because it was the aughts.
Yeah, you had to. And at least for me, I was like, that's a trucker hat. I'm like, but Pharrell wears one. So I guess it's
and Ashton
okay.
Kutcher.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I wasn't wearing Von Dutch quite yet. Then I was like, I love Tom Sizemore and Saving Private Ryan for some
reason.
That
is just so weird.
So it's because he knew, Jack, to your point, and the Goku thing, he kept getting shot and he kept getting back up in the movie. Yeah. And I was like, yo,
yo.
And then my mom was like, there was a monk in Japanese folklore called Benkei, who maybe you would be more interested in. So then I got into figures like that. But now I don't think I've moved on past Pharrell, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it is one of those things where like so much of my identity was being defined by the media, sadly. And I was taking cues, especially from like the blackness that I saw on screen as some kind of standard that I had to sort of uphold, because I was being fed this very specific version of like what black culture was via like television and film, then other versions from my family. And then other times also being Asian, I felt like I was just kind of like a punchline. So I was always kind of sifting through media to try and give me something. I'm like, well, that shit's cool on TV.
Oh, man, maybe what was, like, the Rush Hour that. Era like for you?
Oh, Aisha. Let me tell you how, my cousins, my black cousins were immediately, they're like, I was Jackie Chan from the second the first Rush Hour came out, or Blackie Chan, was a lot of things a lot of people say. and at the time, I was like, or I would even, you know, the thing is, you even point that inward, and you're, like, telling other people, you're like, I'm like Rush Hour, the person.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then take that on, because you'd rather, like, you got laughs from that. But it's always interesting how I was like, I was always using media sort of like this touchstone to inform those things. And again, it was like out of seeking some way of like finding myself, but also like maybe inadvertent or maybe very intentional kind of personality formation as I was doing that.
Yeah, it does feel like a very interesting way to kind of just view the world and the cultural landscape as like these figures that people that like resonate, and you know, they express some, like, you know, I read this book when I was young about like how movies are like cultural dreams. They're like expressing something from like our shared unconscious, and you know, so obviously they resonate and people pay money to see them, but then they have this second life where they shape us in the same way that like linguists talk about language shaping everything we do, because they like give us the color palette that we are working with when we're like trying to build the person that we want to be, like how we talk, what we wear, how to like, you know, hold our body posture wise. There's this crazy story about how like Marlon Brando characters, like nobody in the mafia dressed like that until Marlon Brando did in a movie. And then they were just like, yo,
That's me.
That is me. That is who I want to be.
Like, you wear sweatsuits.
And then they start dressing like that. And then that's what we associate with, you know, people in the mafia, but it was like this invention by a great artist.
Yeah. That's so funny you brought that up, because I did like this deep dive episode about The Godfather and how Italian Americans reacted to it. And I learned that where it was just like, the gangsters were imitating the movie version of themselves. Of
them. Right.
Yeah.
Which is just such a great little anecdote and a great example of how there's just this back and forth, this cultural exchange between the language of the movies and then the language of the people and how they feed into one another. And sometimes they become so blurred that you don't know. It's like a chicken and egg situation, like which actually came first? Like, was this, you know, did this exist? Was it, you know, was Marlon Brando basing the character off of a specific gangster he met? And then it just became sort of a template for all these other gangsters. Yeah, it's so interesting to think about that. Or even something like, I don't know, the Rachel haircut in the 90s, how everyone wanted that. It's just like, what a weird time. What a weird thing. How ingrained pop culture is to all of us.
Yeah. And I feel like we see it now even more, right? Especially like in politics, like especially with like when you look at the symbolism and like the imagery, the semiotics of like political factions now, like I feel like you see so many people on the right, like far right, who are just they love the Punisher. They love the Joker. And there's like this weird, like, again, they're people are finding these archetypes again to, I think, maybe give even their own like political battles meaning. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, because it might not be enough for them to be sort of get the picture because they're looking at maybe their own situation. But they're saying like, OK, I'm on this side of the fence plus Punisher. Oh, yeah, I like this. This is me now. This is me. The guy who is like just unhinged, violent, and feels like that's the only way that can solve things to make people safe.
Yeah. I think those two in particular are very like powerful, central sort of psychological archetypes that have really, you know, like back to Heath Ledger's Joker comes out at the start of the Obama administration. And I think the like resonated with people being like, not everything's okay here, even though kind of the mainstream media seemed to be like, we're good here, everything's good,
right? Post-racial
like, history is over. And then like the Joaquin Phoenix Joker comes out and like adds what I think are two crucial ingredients, that he is an incel and that he is like pointedly not funny but wants to be funny, which I feel like are two of the key features of a lot of the people who identify with the Joker. And like that, yeah, I mean, that character has been around and resonating for a long time, but it just feels like it's really, yeah, in the books that are written about our culture, there probably won't be as many of them as we like to think, but I feel like there will be a whole chapter on like the Joker and the Punisher and shit like that, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. Maybe again, just shows how much meaning we like extract from our popular culture, because it wasn't like no one's like going in history,
right?
I want to be William Tecumseh Sherman or some shit, like, or I'm right. John Brown. They're like, I want to be the Punisher.
Yeah,
I want to be Batman. And you're like, oh shit, okay, so we've completely just exchanged one for the other, but again, has like that same motivating force behind it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and also like the meaning that is being extracted is often just like totally out of line of what the meaning originally was or really is.
Right.
Like when I think about all the, you know, the Bill Maher types who complain about, oh, you could never get Blazing Saddles made today. It's like, okay, but like Blazing Saddles is actually like a radical piece of like filmmaking
media,
and they're just like focused on, oh well, they, you know, they're using the N-word or whatever,
right.
Actually, I don't even remember if the N-word is used. It doesn't matter. It's like they are taking the wrong takeaways from that movie to prove their point, but really it's just like that movie was like, maybe it wouldn't have been made today, but also like most people who are actually like liberals, the ones you are fighting against, they would argue that Blazing Saddles is actually really great because it's way more transgressive than an episode of Family Guy or whatever. Right. Like, it's, yeah. That's
we lovely. Wouldn't let you, Bill Maher, remake Blazing Saddles.
No.
That would suck, and you would do a bad job. All right, let's take one more break, and we'll be right back.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
And we're back. And so, like, this is just a story of, like, the industriousness of the American spirit at this point. This is, like, this is the good news story. So, Taylor Swift concert tickets are impossible to get. So, Swifties who were shut out of the ability to go to the show can now buy some loose confetti from the ones who were able to go.
All right.
People who went to the show, and presumably, like, some of this is just, they just, like, went to Party City, right? But they're claiming that they're grabbing handfuls of the confetti, reselling it online. The pricing isn't that bad. It's only $13 for a pack of 10. But
ten strips of fucking paper?
10 pieces of confetti from the concert, though, Miles. I don't think you understand. It's from the concert.
Wait, you're
that you
buying
weren't
loose,
able to get to.
As we call that on the streets, you're buying loose fetti for $13.
Loosies.
Okay. All right, buying loosies of fetti.
Confetti,
okay,
loosies. But much less popular than buying, you know, regular confetti is confetti loosies, just a single loose piece of confetti.
For sure.
But yeah, they're claiming, like, one seller pointed out that the confetti is somewhat limited at the show. Only floor seats and maybe some of the 100 sections can even get confetti. It's just, like, such a perfect encapsulation of, it's like people who are already wealthy or well-connected enough to be on the floor at,
right,
like, the hardest concert to attend in recent modern history are just, like, gathering up the confetti from the ground.
I can sell you the trash from Privilege World and sell it to you. Yes.
Yeah.
It's elite confetti. You guys, I am going to tell you something that may undermine my credibility on the show, but I have Taylor Swift tickets
Good.
For the Seattle show. But the funny thing is I was able to get them My partner and I were able to get them first round. It was no problem. We just got tickets. And then suddenly everything exploded and came toppling down. And so I'll be gathering some loose confetti and I'll send it to you both. I don't actually have good seats though. So I won't be able to get my mitts on any.
You
any
don't have loose confetti seats?
No, Chelsea, I don't have confetti seats.
I don't have a problem that you're going to the Eras tour. I have a problem that you, I have a problem that you can't get me loose Fetty off the floor. That's my issue. So get it together, please.
Well, maybe I can get, you know, maybe I can get in a fight for you and grab some from somebody else.
Yeah, or
I'm
cause a headline.
To punch a face. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Cause a headline. Something like that.
Another confetti salesperson pointed out that people are getting mad at her. But she's just following Taylor's lead because Taylor Swift has created an insane business model, empire that's easy for people to jump on. And that fan is also flipping $65 tour crew necks for $200 each. So, I mean, I appreciate the hustle. Like, these don't seem like they're just trying to make money to recoup the fact that they might have spent like an entire paycheck on these.
I just love the passionate defense of that Fetty salesperson that said Taylor Swift has created an insane business model. People are getting mad that I'm selling confetti at like $30. But what's crazy is that A, people are buying it, and B, you're in denial thinking Taylor Swift is not a capitalist.
That's right.
Oh my God. Because yeah, I mean, like, I've never seen somebody truly milk their like audience like this to be like, yo, you could buy this album with one extra song on it and a new album cover. Y'all in? Yeah. And they're like, yes, yes. I mean, God, I wish I'm in the wrong business. I think I might just go just to get some of this confetti.
The confetti, like, I truly can't imagine anyone going through the trouble of gathering up the confetti off the floor and then like selling it for $13 for 10 strips like that. How much, like, are you bringing garbage bags with you? Like, I just think this has to be some
cargo pants. Wear cargo pants. Yeah. I've already thought this out, Jack. I've got cargo pants. Whoever I'm coming with has cargo pants, and we're stuffing them shits.
Yeah.
Big are these single pieces of confetti? Because the picture does not have like a to scale.
For
are
scale,
these big
yeah.
pieces of confetti? Are they small?
Band-aid size? Like, what are we saying here?
I'm thinking band-aid size. I've never seen confetti. Like, the picture is really close up. Really shows the texture.
Full spectrum of colors, too.
Yeah. The colors are great. It's a good 10
strips of
confetti.
Are we upselling right now?
Yeah.
You guys don't want to get in on this.
Honestly, I've purchased two packages, 20 pieces of confetti.
You said that was an investment for your kids' college,
it
right?
Is. It's for the future. And
for sure.
It's
you get $2 off if you buy three. So, yeah.
Business planning. But I mean, Jack, this is the same thing. Like, when those like wacky racist people were like bottling up fucking Splash Mountain water before they made it all woke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's
like, there's
probably the same water. No, I guess not. They're probably shutting it down for a while. So
who knows? Either way, it's like, you don't know what the fuck, if that's even what they're selling you. But it's
Same
thing. Like,
yeah,
you could go to parties.
Definitely not. Because, like, I'm putting this in the same category of like, it's not worth it to like carry that shit out with you. Like, it's just so annoying to like be going to the concert and carrying out just like loose handfuls of confetti enough to make it like worth getting. Like, so you would have to have 200 to even get, like, I don't know. It's just you're making a three.
Oh, how do you pay for your what's the formula to pay for your floor seat by selling the loose confetti after?
Like, the margins on the $65 a piece for $200 each, like, that kind of makes sense, but it's still like, are you bringing a fucking forklift with you to the show? Mm-hmm. How many of these shirts are you getting? So I feel like these are all just grifters. Like, the internet is just so full of grifters. These are not people who actually went to the concert. These are people just taking advantage. Like, there's also somebody selling Ziploc bags of Eras Tour Air, which I think is a joke, but
that's a great grift, man.
Yeah.
Come on now. Yeah. But again, it's like, this is where we're at. It's like the same, you see the same thing in every fandom, right? Like, especially with Trump. Trump grifts his all of his fans.
Yeah.
And they grift the fuck out of each other, you know, because they see like, oh, shit, y'all buy anything? OK, watch this. Y'all want Trump bucks? and people are fucking buying them. If you are, okay, so floor seats for the SoFi Stadium show in LA, $3,500.
Yeah.
So quick maths on that. I need to sell like 300 bundles of loose Fetty.
So you have to gather 3,000 pieces of Fetty while you're there.
Okay, so $1.
Seems like
okay.
A lot. Yeah, that seems like a lot.
Yeah. All right.
I'm not up on the Fetty game, but
I mean, it's a lot. But or the smartest person are the workers who have to clean up after the show. And when they brooming that shit up, be like, yo, yeah, put that in a bag. I could watch this.
That
I could sell it to someone who has left Earth. Right. And I can sell it to them on eBay.
Yeah. Hopefully that's who's doing this. Or hopefully it's just a grifter. And
what is something that would seemingly be detritus to anyone else that you would pay actual dollars for?
Mm.
Is there anything like that for either of you, Chelsea, Jack? Like if there was, even if it's something you thought of like, oh, something from this movie or something from this concert or this, even if it was this artist's fingernail.
Right.
Because I
mean, if somebody could get me semen sample of Grimace's. No. Yeah, I've got a big hair collection. So yeah. Famous people that I don't talk that much about. But you've seen it, Miles.
It's yeah. Pretty,
yeah.
I keep telling you that in here.
If I could get something from the Donner Party, that's what I want.
Ooh,
yeah. I'm a big Donner Party scholar. And yeah, if I could get, I don't know, I could get some like dirt from their cabin, I'd pay $13 for that.
Yeah, just off the strength of someone being like, you know, this is Donner
Party.
Yeah. Dirt.
This is fucking You're Donner like, Party fuck dirt. Donner open dirt. Their open their jacket and it's just full of bags of dirt.
Yeah, I think I would probably buy like a roach that any like one of my favorite rappers smoked.
Oh, that'd
yeah.
be cool.
That's I feel like I would buy one of those for yeah. like for cash. I mean, I'm not gonna pay like $100, but if someone's like, yo man, fucking Method Man was smoking this blunt, I was like, okay, what, you want 10 bucks?
You run out of weed, you just pop that in your bong.
Yeah.
Oh no, never.
Never.
Even when I'm desperate, like that's never. I'll die sober before I spark that Method Man roach I bought for $50 from on eBay.
Yeah, like whatever the cleaning crew took out of the studio after like a legendary recording session would actually be pretty dope to have.
That would be like cool. If, yeah, like even if it's like a old Cuckoo-Roo plastic bag.
Exactly.
Remember Cuckoo-Roo?
Yeah. Be like, you can hear that bag crinkle on this way in the torture sketch at the beginning of Method Man. All right, let's talk about the Hobby Lobby satanic display.
Yeah.
So this is like the most 2023 story of the day.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. It comes to us all the way from Texas, where an AI artist and member of the Satanic Temple, mind you, used Midjourney AI to basically take images, like loaded images of the like aisles of Hobby Lobby. And the prompt was Hobby Lobby selling satanic products. And yeah. What came out was stunning. Baphomet. Demons, all the goat legs, everything you could imagine that would make a Christian person faint as they clutch their pearls. But yeah, if you know Hobby Lobby, the hobby store for Christian nationalists who like famously were like, we're not going to pay for fucking any kind of contraception and we can discriminate whoever the fuck we want to because that's our religious choice. So this person, Jennifer Vineyard, made it, just wanted to fuck around with the AI and got these images and first posted it to like an AI like art page. And then other people just without even critically looking at it, started reposting it on Facebook. Like this one woman, you can tell it, she's like reposting from something called AI Art Universe.
Yeah.
And then this woman says, well, I guess even the quote Christian owned companies can be bought for the right price. Severely disappointed. Holy shit. I mean, it's just, I mean, I get it. We're in another satanic panic and nobody is, you know, just credulously sharing shit. But yeah, it's just wild to see how quickly the thing spread. And then again, boom, culture wars.
The sizing is so far off. It's really so funny. Like the the sculptures, the like head, the bust of Baphomet is like, you know, 10 times the size of the nearest thing. One of them actually looks like they have little demons like sitting on a shelf next to like air fresheners and shit. Yeah,
and like live, laugh, love cartons.
Yeah, like baby sized or like toddler sized demons just sitting there, like five times the size of anything else in Hobby Lobby that you can see in the picture. And they're just like, yeah, man, it's fucked up out there, huh?
Yeah.
If you go back to like the 80s, Satanic Panic and 90s, I think this is a great example of something that happens with an urban legend, and especially the Satanic Panic is like, it's called ostension, right? And it's like when there's already some kind of legend, right? So if we think, okay, a town's already worried about a satanic cult because, you know, animals ate another animal weird and left its carcass there, or, right, you know, there's been a murder and nobody can explain it. So there's already this panic around satanic cults. And so a teenager goes, and that's what I see here, is like a teenager going and spray painting Satan Lives on like an underpass. And then because this person's reacting to a panic that already exists and having fun with it and like fulfilling it and fucking with it, then it perpetuates the same problem, because then the people who already believe in the legend take it seriously. And
teenagers
just
wouldn't
exactly
do that,
the
Chelsea.
Same.
Sorry to jump in here and correct you and mansplain. Teenagers would never do something so callous and chaotic as to play into an existing urban legend just to fuck with people.
No, not teenagers.
Yeah. Not my teenagers.
Or those
with a teen spirit who are making AI art in Satanic Temple.
Like, who's apparently like a pharmacist in training. In the article, they like have like, yeah, I'm trying to be a pharmacist, but also like, fuck this, like these people freaking out over shit. The comments on it are people who said, I haven't seen this in hours, but it's been a couple weeks since I've been in there. That's insane. Another person had half a brain and said, I'd have to see this in person before I'd believe it. Good for you, dear Facebook user. Another one said, wow, now this is crazy. Did the Christian owners sail, or are they just in compromise and crossed the line and gone woke? This is absolutely insane, and a line real Christians would never cross.
Thank you.
It's so funny because it's such a famously Christian chain.
Yeah, that's what I love about it,
though. I think that's why they did it, right?
I love the prodding of it to be like, well, what about your sacred Hobby Lobby? Guess what? They're in bed with Baphomet over there. And they're like, we have nothing anymore. There's another, I just love this one. Screw satanic people. Screw satanic people. Look, all I'm... Screw satanic people. Look, all I'm saying is that satanic people are stupid, and obviously you worship the damn devil. I think maybe meant you worship the damn devil and stuff like that, and that's disgusting. I could never. And satanic people can go work right really where they belong, which is hell.
Yeah.
Okay, at least they're working.
Yeah,
go work. Employed. Yeah,
nobody wants to work anymore. Work, I thought.
Yeah, unless you're a satanic person, and then you got you're late for your shift in hell.
You're working twice as hard.
Yeah,
but I mean, like, I don't. Yeah, this is it. This feels like more of what we're gonna see more and more of, shit like this. To your point, like Chelsea, of people already like on an edge or like on a tight wire. And all it takes is just a little bit of like visual stimulus to suddenly kick it right back in and be like, oh my God, this is true. I don't even know. I can't even think critically anymore. This is true. That's all I needed to see because my confirmation bias is set to 3 million.
Yeah. Well, do you guys think that this kind of thing is helpful, or do you, because I look at this sometimes and like, as much as I don't want to feel this way, I'm like, you're really like, I think this is funny. I think it's great to piss off and outrage and freak out people. But then it's like, it does have the same effect of just adding to this story. So I don't know. And I don't think this person really meant that to happen, because it looks like it just was pulled, right? It was pulled from some AI thing.
And then they posted it like on Reddit and like on their own Facebook, and then just it took off on its own.
But, so it wasn't a hoax, a purposeful hoax necessarily.
I think it was probably half-hearted, see where it goes, because I'll make an image that people will take seriously. Now what people do with it after that. I mean, she said her one regret was that she didn't spend more than 10 minutes making it, because like some people were like, I see pound signs next to the prices. Like, I don't know if this is happening in the US then yet. And people were like, oh no.
Because in other countries, they put pound signs next to prices.
To your point, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it prolongs this situation in people's minds, especially for the people who probably are not thinking critically and are just like, yep, and that's, it's even Hobby Lobby. And then someone will tell them, that's fake. And they're like, but I'd believe it if it happened.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's Hobby Lobby is helpful to me because it's like, you are like, if you're going to weaponize this against something, then at least it's against, you know.
That's the only reason I even brought it up, because if it was someone doing that shit in Target or whatever, I'm like, no, this is like, I see the pure cynicism in it. But because of Hobby Lobby's, you know, reputation as being an upstanding Christian company that discriminates indiscriminately, I feel a little less. But I think it's an important thing. And I guess for you, who's someone who looks at this kind of thing, how could you, like, is there anything anyone could do to abbreviate something like this? Because it seems like once it's out there, people are going to believe what they believe. And we see this in this especially post-truth era we live in, where even if they're presented with the truth, they still pivot to something like, yeah, but I could see how it would be real. And it just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean, it's a $1 million question, I think. Yeah. And I mean, I
how do we solve this?
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. How do we get rid of the satanic panic since we did it so well before? But I don't know. I mean, I go back and forth because it does feel like an uphill battle that's possibly... I mean, this is so ancient. This is an ancient thing. I mean, if you go back to like even Jewish blood libel with Christians saying, okay, Jewish people are satanic and they're sacrificing children. And, you know, this is like 1,000 years ago or more. So it's like, I don't know. I think it's just like we were talking about with moral panics all over the world. This is just the most entrenched thing because you're dealing with what you consider the biggest evil, right? And so when you have this, especially like you have like a satanic child killer of some kind, which apparently we all are, you know, it's easy then to justify whatever you want to do. And so I don't think people are going to let go of the ability to demonize literally an entire group of people or entire political affiliation or whatever, and then, you know, justify whatever they want to do in retaliation to that evil. So I don't know if it's, I think, you know, sometimes I get pissed off at certain celebrities that really play into sort of the satanic Illuminati thing as a lark. But I do think it has a lot of negative effects for people who aren't like massively rich celebrities in small towns who might say, okay, like, this is connected to gay people because a gay artist has like really played into the satanic thing. I think that that can have some damage, but I would never say that it's not. I don't know. I really toe a line there of not being sure, because I do feel like sometimes it trickles down and does harmful things to really play into that. But at the same time, I don't know if it really truly makes a difference or if it's just entrenched and always going to be there.
Right.
I feel like the fact that these are all like the sizing is off, everything's like just a little too stupid. I think that makes it extra fun and worthwhile.
Fun.
Like, I have no notes on this because it inherently, like, it's exposing the stupidity of the people who would get mad at this by being like, this is, the Hobby Lobby is selling these like life size satanic sconces like next to Yankee Candle decorations.
And it's not even Halloween. It's just
one Baphomet head in the middle of the fucking lamp aisle.
Looking at these, they're not even Baphomets, really. I don't even know. They're like dark angels with wings coming out of their heads.
Yeah, you know? There's like one goatee head, but a lot are just sort of vague AI demonic regalia. Yeah.
I truly have no notes on it. Like, I think they should have a second thought about like whether they should have spent more time on it, because I think they spent just the exact right amount of time.
I think shitposting
is like one of the last like things that one of the last
thing we have before the fall.
Like we have to like create truth that is like, I don't know,
we need shitposts for comfort. I think if anything, go harder and make it like go for the most unbelievable thing possible. True. Where it's like, they're selling Jesus and Baphomet 69ing dolls in the kids aisle at Hobby Lobby. Like, here they are. And people, I mean, I'm sure it's just so funny because people are it is, again, it's like horrifying too, that some people are really like, yep, those are the stakes and that's the situation I'm in. They are making this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. Okay. Well, anyway.
Absolutely.
But I like
screw satanic people.
Look.
You're going to get so many comments where words that shouldn't be capitalized are, and it's just complete capitalization anarchy. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I do love that it was satanic was treated as a proper adjective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so again, this first.
Screw you, woke moralists. Is that what that quote was from Jordan Peterson?
Oh, yeah. I
go to hell, woke moralists.
It's not on my quote of the day calendar I have for
him. Oh, yeah. It's coming up, though.
It's coming up.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.